Is it going, yeah?
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone. My name's Bernard. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for coming back. And Thomas is going to read the preamble for us.
Thomas Alcoholics. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, either endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you, Thomas. And the fellow just come in, John. You've not done an AA meeting before, John, have you? So he walked in earlier. This is his first.
I went to the toilet
and I came in here by mistake. And I'm an alcoholic. Oh! It's quite lucky day, I guess. Cheers, John. Right, you know, the hard part is we all got to listen now. So your man Frank, yeah? Right, so we're going to have a chat now in a meeting, right? And then someone have a chat with you in a little while, yeah? Okay, Frank, are you ready, mate?
Yeah.
Good man.
Okay, my name is Frank, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Frank.
And it's lovely to be here. And my sobriety date is the 20th of May 1978. And from my first meeting, I knew I was in the right place. And people started talking about things that I had kept secret and didn't want to share with anyone. And here they were blurting it all out. But I knew it was me that were talking about me. And there was a woman in the chair at my first meeting. And honestly, even though my mother was an alcoholic, I didn't think there would be a lot in common between us, you know. It wouldn't be. I just thought women and men drink differently. But she spoke all about me, you know. And though she wasn't addressing me, I knew what she was saying was about me, you know. I'd done the similar things. I was 21 then, and as she shared, I realised that what you also were saying, if you continue, Frank, this may also happen to you. And it really hit home, you know. By the time I come to AA, I was desperately alone in my head with all my shame and guilt. And the remorse that comes with all the stuff I'd done, and I couldn't shake it. I couldn't shake that shame. And no matter what starts I ever had during my life, you know, when people would come and say, "Sort yourself out, Frank. You know, pull yourself together. You know, you've got wife and kids. You want to, you know, make a fist of it. You know, do this, do that." No matter how many times that happened, I just always went back to drinking. It was just, I made promises, oh God, so many times. And it just was, that was the way I was. I didn't understand it. I didn't understand, even to the point of almost losing my life on several occasions, I still would drink again, you know. And I would lie, obviously. I would say, "No, I'm not touching, I'm not, I'll be a better dad, I'll be a better son, I'll be a better workmate, I'll be," but it, I just kept drinking. And of course, once I drank, then anything could happen, and it was mostly to my detriment. I was born in Derry City, actually, in Northern Ireland, and I had five brothers, two sisters, my mum and dad, and it was a very, very, very small house. One bedroom, three double beds, two single beds, a piss bucket for night, and a toilet outside, running water outside, and a gas ring and a range to do the cooking. It was a tiny place. So my mum and dad both, I believe, both had this illness. And from a very young age, I was terrified of my father, because when he drank, all kinds of nasty things would happen. And generally him and my mum would fight, and I was terrified of that violence, terrified of the shouting. And of course, as a child, 4 years old, I didn't understand why was all this happening. And then the people that came into my home when I was a child were also drinkers, alcoholics. And some would go off to the local mental hospital, which was called Granger. They'd go off for a weekend away, you know. Or where's Pat? He's gone for a Granger for the weekend. You know, it's like, it was just taken as a norm. That's what happened. You drink too much, you know, you go there, and you'll come back out. And there was that kind of acceptance around the drinking and the drinking patterns. And everybody was in debt. You know, everybody had something going on, you know. God, when the Providence checks come out, my mother had a field day, like, you know, she'd sell them on and do all kinds of stuff. So it was, you know, so it wasn't just the drinking, it was the whole dysfunction. It was money, you know. There wasn't enough money ever to go around, so there was always pawning, you know. My mum had these special linen sheets and that, so every Monday we were up the pawn shop pawning them to get the money, you know. But still, even with things that were that upset me, and I still would go down walking by the pubs, and I'd hear the, you know, especially Friday night, you'd hear the music, people laughing, and that, and we weren't allowed to go in them. And then again, I could go in the Snug just to get a couple of bottles of Guinness or whatever for my dad, you know. But you couldn't actually go in the pub. And it was all that, I was so intrigued to go in there. I wanted that to be part of my life. I couldn't wait to grow up and be in the pub with the dancing and that sort of thing. So if you like, I put all the fights and the debt and the anger, I put all that behind in my mind, and I'd done stuff to get rid of that feeling of fear. And, you know, I was always into sport, football. So I'd done things to not think about what was going on. And then I grew older, I just kept getting into trouble. You know, I was just like my brothers. You know, my brothers, they went to ball store and that, and I thought that's where I end up. You know, my brothers are gone there, so what does it matter? You know, I'll go there. But I was always getting caught, you know, getting caught bragging into shops and things like that. And but my mum and dad too, they were steeped in their religion, you know, their faith. I didn't understand faith and God and Jesus, and couldn't understand it even as a child. You know, I was always getting sent home with letters. Because I would say things, I would ask questions in school, and they'd send me home with a letter. So then my mum, I'd get beaten for it. Why are you saying these things in class, you know? But I didn't understand this thing they were trying to teach me. And so I had it in me that I was different, and maybe that I wasn't a good boy or whatever, you know, and that continued throughout my life, really. I always felt less than, and I really wanted to achieve, and whatever I achieved, it wasn't good enough. And plus two, until I come into AA, I was very materialistic. Success to me was about money, was about achieving goals, you know, was the crown on your head, really. You know. Because that's how my parents judged things, judged success. Oh, good job, nice house, nice car. So that was my background, and all kinds of stuff went on as a kid. You know, all kinds of abuse, physical abuse. It was, you know, my father was unpredictable. I used to hide behind the sofa, and, you know, I'd swear I'd never be like him. I'd never be like my dad, you know. My mum's drinking hadn't really taken off then, but she'd get drunk very quick, and then when she got drunk, she'd get just stupid, really. You know, start knocking things over, falling over, hitting her head, that sort of stuff, you know. But my dad, I was terrified of. And also the people he'd bring home, you know, they were the same elk as him, you know, and I found that difficult to deal with as a child. So mechanisms for getting out of that was, you know, I would pray. They would say, talk to me about prayers and that, and I would pray like mad to get that fear away. And, you know, when I misbehaved as a child, they would say, oh, you're the devil's child, you're going to go to hell. And I was terrified. But you see, that didn't leave me. Right through my childhood, my teenage years, into an adult, that didn't leave me, that stuff. and I didn't understand why I behaved the way I did. So we moved from Northern Ireland to England because of the troubles out there, and I came to England and it was different. People were different, they were friendly, they weren't like my neighbours would say, you know, or because we did the Irish English thing, you know. I was born in a real Republican area in Northern Ireland, so they hated anything to do with the English or the Queen or anything like that, and that's how you're brought up, were like that. Though my father was a Protestant who changed a Catholic to marry my mum, so he was despised by his own side and never trusted by the Catholics, and he was just in a no-win situation, and quite often most of the fights were because he was a Protestant. Not the fact that he changed his faith, he didn't care about that. You were a Protestant, that was it. So a lot of the fights that he would happen when we were out, you know, people would just, you know, it was that kind of climate, you know. People would just start fights with him, you know, because of where he come from. And all his family were members of the Orange Lodge and that, and everybody seemed to know it, you know. And so there was always that friction. But when I came to England, it was great. There was none of that, you know. And I used to do lots of things in Ireland for excitement, you know. You go out and throw stones and petrol bombs and all sorts of stuff, get involved in all that. It was exciting, the adrenaline would be pumping, a young boy, you know. But when I came here, it was just fantastic, the freedom I had. And I was always good at football, so I made friends really quick. Of course, we started wanting to go to the pub and that, and you know, and then I started work. I was only over here about a month and I started work as an apprentice, and every Friday it was about the pub. I had to clean up the electrician's tools, put them in his bag, and then meet them down the pub. And I was a man, you know, I was walking in with men, I was swaggering in there, you know. But I was drunk on 2 pints, you know. I was, had my head out the window of the car, being sick down the side of the car, you know. And I got on with most people. I was quite a joker and a bit of a wind-up merchant, you know, and I would do all kinds of silly things, you know, and that was all right. But then something happened, you know. I started getting a bit high and mighty, and then the violence started, and I started fighting, and I wanted to be the best scrapper in the pub and the best, you know, best at everything, you know. That's the truth. I wanted to be the best at everything. But inside I knew I wasn't, and that was the climb down. And I drank anything, you know. I started off on, I think it was light and bitter, you know, and then from there, just anything, really. I drank anything. And then my mate said to me, here, try this, Frank, it'll blow your brains out. I would try it, you know. I was, oh, give me 2 of them, or give me 6 of them, you know. So I'd take that drink. And I suffered with blackouts very early on. The blackouts got, you know, more severe. I'd start losing, not just the night before. What did I do last night? It would be a day. It would be. And I'm a person who, if I put alcohol in me, I just can't handle it. I'm not one of these guys who drink 10 pints and walk out. 4 or 5 pints and I'm done. You know, I'm holding, gripping the bar because I'm going to fall over. It's the same with coffee, with Red Bulls, anything like that. I just can't. This body won't take that. But of course, I tried to. I would keep on drinking and drinking, being sick and being a nuisance. And there was lots of violence and there was lots of upset. I got married at 17. We had a daughter at 18. But we both were running away from home. You know, so we both decided to get engaged and get married. And we got set up in a flat and that. And we had most things, you know, we had things in a flat that would take people 10 years to get. We were really set up, you know. But then my daughter come along and I just thought, I mean, I really wanted to get it aborted. I didn't want a daughter. I didn't want children. That's the last thing I wanted, was responsibility, you know. Didn't want that. It was going to spoil everything. So, but we had Hayley, and she's beautiful. Hayley is beautiful. And I was never home after that, once the baby was born. And when I was home, I was always arguing or fighting, you know. I didn't want that responsibility. I was still an apprentice. Didn't earn much money. So I started doing all kinds of stuff to get money, sometimes legal, sometimes illegal, you know. Sometimes it involved violence and that. And lots of scrapes, lots of petty stuff, you know. Of course, when you're doing that, you think you're, you know, the, you know, the elite bank robbers or something like, you know. And, you know, that sort of thing was just part of my life, you know, just there wasn't anywhere I wouldn't go that there wasn't something going on, something cheap to buy or a party or drinks or... There's always something to engage in that involved drink. I'd done nothing in my life without drink. Everything was about drink. Christmas was planned months in advance. It was all about drinking. And the illusion was that I was a good father, that I was a good husband, that I was a good workmate. That in fact, I wasn't. You know, I really wasn't. But when I'm on a bar stool, I'm the best, you know. And of course, in that stuff, I went to hospital a few times, stabbings and getting run over. That was a classic. I had a bit of a run of that, walking out in front of cars and motorbikes. Honestly, I did two or three times I'd done that in the one year. I think there was a hospital in Tooting Beck, and it called St James's, and I'm sure they're going to give me my own bed there. I was always ending up there, you know, accident emergencies, broken limbs, fingers, cuts. I remember the stabbings that went on. I got stabbed this night, and the guy cut my lung, and so I almost died. And as I lay on the hospital bed, my family was around me, and my wife was heavily pregnant then with my first child. And they're all saying things, and that, and I'm nodding, and you know, maybe even a few tears, you know. But I always kept thinking of the County Arms pub, which was about 400 yards down the road. That's all I was thinking about. That was close. When I get out of here, I'm going to really enjoy myself. And I did. As soon as I got out of that hospital, my wife was with me. We ended up in the County Arms pub, and within, I don't know, a short period of time, she was in tears saying, "Frank, please don't drink anymore." And in the end, the governor got a taxi for her to go home because she was heavily pregnant, and they threw me out of the pub. And that's it, really. Another time I could be joking and laughing and everyone would be happy. You know, it's a crazy illness. And I'm just anything. Once I drank, anything was happy. Anything was possible, good or bad, but mostly bad. So I came to AA on that day, and it was Streatham on a Saturday afternoon, and... I remember making the phone calls, and the guy met me and he took me to the meeting. I remember looking at him, and he didn't have the same colour skin as me, and I thought, I'm not sure about this. Because I hated everybody and everything. I had a reason for everyone. I'm not talking to him, I'm not talking to her. She's this, he's that. Even my own family, you know. But anyway, he became one of my best friends. And he's still sober today. He's 42 years sober. So after that meeting, I had a whole bunch of literature. I went off, started reading about the steps. Oh, he's a bit nuts. The word God, no way, man, I'm not. Because what it was at it like a convent, and there was these nuns floating about, like the door was open. And I'm standing looking at the nuns, and I've seen the Serenity Prayer on the table. I'm thinking, what's going on? And then it was founded by Americans, you know, and I thought, oh, fuck. You know, what's happening here? You know, but I kept coming back. And I went to a meeting that night. That day, my younger brother got married, and we all lived in Tooting, all about 5 minutes walk from each other. But I wasn't invited at a wedding because things happened, you know. Just anything could happen. So they didn't invite me. And but that night, my mum rung up to keep the peace, just in case, you know. Because you know it's like we have a resentment to not going a few pints, and you go around there and start smashing the windows, you know. Well, I would anyway. Anyway, she invited me around to her house. She didn't know I'd been to a meeting. I went around there, started drinking Coca-Cola, litres of it. So, and there was a friend of my mum come up and says, "Oh, you're on the hard stuff tonight, Frank." I said, "Oh, yeah, yeah." She says, "Why is that?" And I just blabbed it at her. I said, "Well, I've stopped now. I'm going to AA." She says, "I go to AA as well." Which is just amazing, you know. So we chatted, and then I went off to the meeting, and I met an old fellow called Vince. He wasn't so old then, but he's 50 odd years sober now. and met him, introduced me. He introduced me to Linda, who was making the teas, this ex-bunny girl, Australian. Oh my God, I was coming away regardless. I was coming for Linda, you know. That was it. Well, we all become good friends. There was things that people said that I just let go over my head. They talked about spirituality and God and higher powers. I just let that go. I was into the stories. I was into the living proof, you know, and I believed you. When you said you'd done this, you'd done that, and you were sober, that's what really got me. For, you know, living proof that it works. So I just hung on to that, you know. And then I just progressed in AA. I kept going to meetings, kept going. People kept saying to me, you know, keep coming back, Frank, and I'd go and I'd complain, and I'd say, you say it's going to get better, but when? When's it going to get better? Because dealing with my head was a tough thing, what was going on in my head. But things at home were getting better. Paint was going on the walls, you know. I can remember my first holiday was in a caravan site down in Bognor. It was great. And I could hear the clubhouse going, you know, and I wasn't going over there. I didn't want to go over there. And Bob Monkhouse was the starter then. Like, he was over there. And well, no, I don't care. I'm not going over there. You know, I'll stay here. I did, you know. And, you know, and it was good. It was good. I kept going to meetings. Met loads of brilliant people, you know, ring me up. I started doing telephone service after 2 months. You know, someone said, do you want to do telephone service? I said, yeah, sure. Went along. That was great, you know. And then I went into the prisons after 6 months. An old fellow called Ron Smith, he sort of hijacked me and got me to go into the prisons. And I'd done the prisons for about 10 years, went into the prisons for about 10 years running, and took over his job after about 5 years, 5 or 6 years. That was great. But in the early years, in the early time I was in AA, things were going great, you know, everything was working out, and I was earning money, and then I started feeling a bit discontent and looking at other people, and I wondered what other people had, you know. I couldn't get rid of this material stuff, and I, you know, and I hear stories, people coming in, I'll be chatting to other blokes and that, what they're earning, what they got, and I started getting discontented with stuff, and then I just started drifting back to my old ways, but just without the drink. You know, I was having affairs and spending money right, left and centre, and so I was lying and cheating and getting it up to all kinds of nonsense, you know, with bent stuff, you know, stolen goods, and you know, and trying to keep that a secret, walking into meetings. Oh yeah, I'm leading a spiritual life, yeah. Honest Frank, that's me, you know. And of course, all the literature and everything, wouldn't read it, you know. Anyway, what happened was, after some time of doing this, I ended up running over Wimbledon Common, crying my eyes out, because my behaviour had changed back. I just wasn't drinking. I'd just gone back to my old ways, but not drinking. And people were getting hurt all the time. I was lying and cheating, and I knew I'd drink again if I didn't sort it out. And then I went to a meeting, and I shared this at the meeting, and there was a bloke there who I didn't particularly like. He was very posh, wore the old tweeded jackets, the loafers and the corduroys and the cane. And he cornered me once, started talking to me about the steps. I thought, oh, he can go, you know, get out of here quick. And that nonsense, steps and stuff. So anyway, he came up to me and he told me something, and we both started laughing. It was a bit of News of the World stuff, you know, between us, you know, and I'd done something similar. Anyway, he became my sponsor. And he took me through the steps, and it was just great. Some of it was difficult. I didn't believe in God, and he was really into God and the higher power and that. But I used AA because I couldn't stop drinking until I come to AA, and there was something that existed between us that kept me sober. Even though things were going, you know, wrong, and I was having all these doubts and things, I'd still come back to meetings. So I thought there must be a power that exists in AA. And so I've always used that, the power of people, and that's how I done it. So with that, with you as my higher power, I continued on the steps. And it was, you know, two steps forward, four back, and that sort of thing. You know, when it came to step four, I procrastinated for a long time, and then my sponsor sort of cornered me, and eventually I done my step four, and I went and shared it with him. And one of the things that I didn't want to tell him, and I was sweating as I was saying these things, because bearing in mind, I really believed I was one of the worst people in the world. I was a terrible son and a terrible husband, and you know, all that guilt and shame, I took that with me. And one of the things was, I didn't love my children. I told him, I said, David, I don't think I love my children. And that was the worst thing on my step four. And then we started chatting about it, you know. And then it was like, I didn't know how to love. I was never shown to love. My father never come and hugged me. My mother never told me she loved me. Except when she was drunk on the phone or something, late at night. I didn't know how to go about caring for someone or loving someone without putting Frank first. Because I'd always done that. That was my mechanism. Put me first. And I could disguise that. You know, oh, I love you. But really it was about me getting what I wanted. So in AA, I've grown to know and love. Know what love is. And I love my children today. And I have two children that have this illness. I have four children, but two of them have this illness. My son hasn't drank for about 15 years. But my daughter, she's out there. She does anything, you know. She's out there. But the other two are fine, you know. And but I love them all. And that's a great thing. And I sit and I think about them. Even close my eyes, I think about them. And I truly know I love them, you know. And I have grandchildren as well now, you know. And I feel the same way about them. But that's a kind of different relationship, you know. So that's a different gift. So I continued through the steps with his sponsor. He was a really, you know, I think he saved my life on many occasions. I used to go around and sleep on his floor. Sometimes I'd be really troubled with things in life, you know, and he'd say, well, come round. And I'd come round and sit with him, and I'd stay at his place and talk it over, you know. Because I really didn't know about, relationships were always difficult. I'd always, you know, my coat was half on with the car keys. You know, when I'm in a relationship, that's how I was. When she finds out about me, it'll be over. And even when I'm married, you know, my second wife, I thought, when she, this won't last long, you know. So, because I had low self-worth. I had no idea of a value, if I was of value to anyone. And that I found that difficult. I found that difficult in sobriety. It didn't change overnight. It took years and years and years to change that. Because, you know, it was in me. But I continued going to meetings. I'd done, you know, 12-step work. And I got involved with regions and intergroups and done service. And I love it. I still do it today. I'm still involved with regions today. And I love it. I really do. But things had to change, you know. I had to change, and I see today I welcome change. I mean, the person I was then, 10 years sober, 20 years, I'm not today. I'm different. I've changed. The God thing was never a problem, you know. Not believing in God was never a problem, you know. I just believed in you. And when it says in the big book, the three pertinent ideas about A, we're alcoholics, we could not manage our own lives. B, no human power could relieve our alcoholism. And C, God could and would if he was sought. See, I don't believe that. I believe human power relieved my alcoholism. That's how it worked for me. But if you believe in God, don't believe in God, that's fine. It's fine. I'm not going to rock your boat. You know, that's the way it is. But, so a day at a time, I've been coming back to AA. I've had some fantastic things, you know, happen. I've had all the usual things that happen to people: ailments, sick children, hospital visits, you know. A couple of times, not so long ago, a couple of years, well, 8 years ago, I had a brain hemorrhage. That was a bit, you know, a bit funny, you know, getting over that, getting through that. But not once did I think about drinking. Not once did I think, you know, oh, this is going to end, you know, I'm going to die now. It was just, It was just, it happens in your life, you know. What can I do to get through this? There was a stage when a mistake was made, and I really did think that was it. My time was up. And what it was, I was in this, they put me in this cot, this bed, and pulled up the sides. And they put a mask on me for oxygen. And this is how strange things happen. And what it was, I started to choke and vomit, but they left the cubicle. So I was choking to death because I had the mask on and I couldn't move. And I thought, oh, just let me die. Just let me die. And something happened. Like a voice said, do you really want to die, Frank? And it was just like me talking to you today. And I don't understand that. And I said to this voice, but without words, I said, I'm not scared of dying, but I love my life. He said, you're going to be all right. You're going to be all right. Just give it a push. And I managed just to turn myself, which was really difficult, enough so I could get the vomit away from my front of my face. And then my younger brother come in, and he was so shocked by what's going on, he just picked me up automatically and hugged me. And that shook it as well, and then he took the mask off and, I'm here to tell the tale. Now, I don't understand that, but it happened in my life, you know. And it's so, there's lots of things that happen. It happened to me, it happened to most people, you know, sick children, what have you. Finances going astray, you know. And I talked to you about relationships. I've been divorced 3 times in AA. And the last divorce, I thought, there's something wrong. The common denominator here is me. You know, it's no good me blaming the others. Though I could write the list. She done this to me. You know, but so I went and got some work. I went and got some psychotherapy. I actually went into it because it was just... And that was really good stuff for me. That was really good stuff. Because, you know, it's progress, not perfection. And the thing is, too, being an AA, see, so much of it is about, I have found in my experience, is that it's almost like the cap and hand thing. Where I'm an alcoholic, I've done lots of things that's upset people, that's not been sober, you know what I mean? So I'll punish myself for that. I'm my own worst enemy. I will hammer myself for not getting things right. Yeah, if I think about that background I told you about, my childhood, I was armed to mess up. I was armed for dysfunction. I was armed for alcoholism. But what I know today is it isn't the drink, because it's still in me. It's not just the drink. So the insanity is still there. Not so much now. I'm not going to call myself insane now, because I've done work on myself. I've done work on stopping the behaviours. And these were mechanisms I created in order to feel good in my life. Because what had happened to me many, many years ago. And I'm not blaming I'm not blaming my parents, not blaming the people who abused me. I'm not blaming them. But as a result of that, I behaved the way I did. And drink is part of that relief and that mechanism. So today I see my recovery is different. You know, I still go to meetings as often as I can. I see only these great people that turn up in meetings and share their experience, strength and hope, and I love it. And yesterday morning myself and Liz were at a meeting, and Epson, I just sat there watching people coming in, and we're all from different backgrounds, different creeds, different ways of life, and yet we have this bastard of an illness, and it brings us together, you know. And just by getting together, that miracle of how it works, you know, it's such a great thing, isn't it? It's a great thing. And I didn't know what the answer was. In fact, just hours before my first meeting, it was suicide. I was going down the Tooting Broadway lines to throw myself on the tube lines, just hours before I phoned up. And what had happened was, I'd looked around, and I'd obviously had a fight with my wife, and the place was in a mess. My younger daughter was picking up things, and there was a little ironing board, and she was putting stuff on it. And when I came down through the door, she looked at me and she started crying. she said, why do you and mummy always have to fight? And so she must have been, because I didn't get home till late, so she must have been listening to it. And I just, you know, I just crumbled. I just, that's it. The way out is death. You know, I've got to take my own life. And I went upstairs, but I didn't realise Hayley had followed me up there. And she held my hand in the bathroom. And she told me that she loved me. And in that moment, I could see in her eyes, I said, there's got to be something I can do. And I thought about the guy across the street. He was a family man. He was out on Sundays, religiously, washes his car, and takes his family for a meal. And I used to call him a wanker. I used to think, what you need is a good piss-up. She said, hi, Frank. You know, hi, Frank, my arse. You know. But he was a good man, a good family man. You know, there's another guy, John, down the road, same street, Salvation Army. Well, I used to take the piss out of him all the time. All the time. But he still used to come say hi, Frank, and talk to my wife, because he knew what was going on. Because quite often down that street, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I'd be shouting my head off. You know. Incredible. So the day at a time, I've kept coming back, kept close, kept involved in service, and I've a better acceptance now of people around me, and I just believe that's what it's about. It's, you know, it's a really loving program, and you hear people talk about spiritual way of life and things like that, you know, and that may be for you, but I just think that my spiritual way of life is being the best Frank I can today, being the best Frank. And if I'm not looking at it, don't punish myself, look at it. Why have I messed that up? Why, you know? And it's not so much wrong or right, you know, it works or it doesn't work. You know, is this working for me? Why isn't it working? Do I need it to work? You know. And I think anything when you're sober is achievable. You know, you can try. You want to climb Everest? Try it. I'd love to climb Everest, actually, but, you know, there's a, go and buy the book first. Go and talk to someone who's done it. You know, there's ways of doing it. You know, it's the whole world is open to me just by not drinking a day at a time and coming to AA. I know if I don't come here, based on my experience of being sober as long as I have, that the chances I will drink again if I don't come here. And I will have an unhappy life. That is my experience. Though I've met people who have seemed to have done it. I don't know, but I can't. I know I can't. I know, and I've told you about in the past, if I let go of the basic principles, I go back to my old ways. The sickness is there, I go back to it. And that's insane. You know. So I don't know how much longer I've got to talk. But
10 minutes, you want, Frank?
10 minutes.
Yeah, if you want it, yeah.
Ad lib for 10 minutes.
Really sorry, Frank. Sorry, sorry about it. It's my first time, so I'm not sure how it all works. I've got a shitload of stuff to do. What a fantastic chat. Tooting back. I'm a South boy. I'm a South side boy support myself. I hope you're a Chelsea fan. Yeah. You're a diamond, mate. That's all I can say. You're a big man to say what you said. But unfortunately, I've got to go. Right? But what a pleasure and a privilege, mate.
Thank you.
You know George Beasley, don't you? You know George Beasley?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, one of your lot. Yeah. My local club, Tavern. So, yeah. And I'm an alcoholic. But I will try and get back.
Please
that's
do.
Cause, that's because of you.
Quarterly. Please come back.
Hey, what is yeah,
I will. I've got a shitload of sort.
I know. I know. When you get to judge.
Welcome. All right, Mark. So, 10 minutes, right.
If you want it, you know. You're all right with it, yeah?
Yeah.
Good man.
So, let's think on the God thing. I like to talk about it. I have sponsees who believe in higher power, and that's great, and we get through our steps and that's just amazing, even having a sponsee, you know, having someone I could share my experience with. So it's never really been a problem, you know. And it really is an understanding. My understanding of it is it's just it works through people. You know, higher power works through people. Um, And it's kept me in good stead since I've been in AA, really. I mean, I remember trying the prayers and trying saying, bless you this and bless you that. And, you know, always you hear people talk about the footprints, you know, that thing in the sand, footprints and that. And I try to get the terms with that, you know, I just can't do it. I just can't get that, you know. And, but it's never gotten in the way. Never got in the way of me caring about people or people caring about me. So really it is about change and acceptance. And I found, you know, just today, accepting life on life's terms is not always easy, but it does get easier when you stay sober. I think I'll leave it there, actually.
Right,
thank you.
Just, that's brilliant. Thank you. I mean, I'll call it... I've got to be honest, Frank, when you were sharing, it's a very similar background. You know, my mum, they come over from Ireland, they brought us up completely out of the Irish community, away from all the drinking and everything, you know. And the one thing I learned as a kid was you couldn't make me cry, you know. And I could bite into the lip and everything, and you know. And I'll be honest with you, when you were sharing, I was thinking, Christ's sake, I'm going to cry. You know, I could feel it, what you were saying inside, and I could feel it. And for a long time in AA, the one thing I wouldn't do was cry. You know, I'd take an Iden, you know, and I could feel the tear coming up my eye, and I'm thinking, fuck me, I'm swearing now. I'm thinking, I'm going to, you know, the humiliation, you know, all that, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, and like you're saying about the neighbours, I'm sitting there, you're talking about the neighbours, and I'm doing it to you. You know, I'm thinking, nah, this ain't real, this, nothing can get, you know, and it's that, it's like you said, it's people, isn't it? You know, like my, they're all up around the Swan and Stockwell and all that, you know. And when I used to come down to Reading to visit us, our neighbours, we had to tell them that Joe Carhill was a player for Ireland, you remember, footballer, you remember, because all we'd hear was like, Joe Carhill and the Mayhem coming up the road, and you know, and like you said, there's all the shame in him. And I was a polite kid, I'm not going to go off on one. And the thing was, though, like you said, once the knock hit me, out of control, you know, and. In 78, my man died in 77, you know, and it's frightening where you can go in it. You know, when you're talking about your children, my heart went out for you, especially at that point. You know, I've got a son out there, 23, you know, he's big. I mean, I'm the small one in the family, you know, the crowd, you've got the big ones in it, isn't it? And he's like, I can't, he was in Reading last night, steaming. He's just round the corner, and I've walked, it's an Irish pub, right? I've walked down to it, and I thought it was kicking off. Oh, my heart's gone. I'm thinking it's 1977. I'm 21. Is that you? No, you know that. That's all you know is yourself, isn't it? You know, and I had to pull back and I walked up. You know, and I can't put my drinking head into his head because I'll never sleep again. You know, and the similarities are so strong. And yet, I came into AA in '82, the height of it all, right? You know, and it was the preamble that kept me in there. The Irish lads kept saying to me, you know, because all I kept seeing was, you know, what you shouldn't be seeing in things. You know, like a Christian name would tell me so much about things. You know, I was all wired, like you said, it's all madness, isn't it? You know, and to sit here today with you, you know, and it was powerful. I don't know if anyone else felt it. Oh man, Christ Almighty! I was really—it's a typical alcoholic. I was really trying to find reasons to think, "Fuck you!" Do you with me? I don't want to feel this. You know, take a fucking walk with you. You know, but that's what we're nice. We were talking about this when we said, you know, this thing about an alcoholic. I could help you out, but I wouldn't give myself the time of day.
Yeah.
You with me? I could. People say to me, "Bernie, you're a loving lad. You're this." I've got nothing in here. Dead. You know, but you. We've got it though, but we're the least to see it though, aren't we? You know, and the thing, this little thing we got going here, we're struggling to get people to come to it, you and me. And when you give Larry the note with names on it, you know, I knew Daniel's the sound bloke, because that's the gratitude in there, you know. We know how hard it is in AA to get things going at times, isn't it? You know, there's a lot of, it's not always happy clappy, is it? You know, I've got to try and get out of this. And, you're a good man, Frank.
Thank you.
You know, and it was we've I'll tell you what, you want to listen to some of the speakers we've had this week. It's powerful, isn't it? Mm. It's like going back. I was talking to an old timer yesterday, right? And she said it to me, it's like when you fall in love for the first time, you know, because, like, listening to you, the identification is maximum. Like, in some meetings, I go, so I'm struggling to hear some identification, you know, and then I'm thinking, is that me, am I, whatever, but it was a good, very, thank you.
Thank you.
And, well, we're going to have a break now, smoke break, and we'll be back for your vet next, say, like, just before I passed, yeah? Do we give, is he not getting a clap?
Yeah.
Everyone else got them, they don't like you here. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you. Yeah, well done.